Welcome to The Backlog, a podcast hosted by Adaptivate. I'm your host, Nate Nelson, Managing Director of our LA office. Adaptivate partners with clients to accelerate outcomes by changing and sustaining new, transformative ways of working. We are a global firm with offices in the US, Canada, Singapore, Europe, and Australia. My guest today is Frank Cazas, Director of Product at Hyatt Hotels. Frank, it's fantastic to have you on. I'm glad we can make this work. Let's hear a little bit more about you.
Sure thing. So as you know, Nate, I've got a little bit of a non-traditional background in the software world. I started out as a supply chain undergrad and worked for Caterpillar in their supply chain space early in my career. I ended up going back for an MBA at Kellogg here in Chicago and got into strategy consulting at a firm called LEK. After that, I decided to make a career pivot and ended up at Allstate, also here in Chicago, in their telematics and data startup called Arity. So it was there that I really started to learn about agile product management with a company called Pivotal Labs that we were working with. So product has really become a passion of mine over those couple of years since working with Pivotal. And I continue to grow in that area at Allstate in a couple of different roles. And then most recently, I was at Healthcare Services Corp here in Chicago as well as director of product on our digital team before coming over to Hyatt about 9 months ago.
Great. We appreciate that background, Frank. Talk to us a little bit more about your role at Hyatt. How would you describe that?
So I'm one of three product directors on Hyatt's digital team, and I'm accountable for four product teams that are focused on the pre-stay experience, so kind of everything up through booking for our guests. Since our teams are cross-functional, I work closely with counterparts in product design and engineering. My role really has three major components to it. The first is helping to design and influence the operating model for our digital organization. So we're in the throes of kind of an agile transformation at Hyatt and constantly iterating on how we're working and what our team structures look like. So that's a part of the role. Secondarily, I help guide the day-to-day operation of the product portfolio with the four teams that I mentioned. And then third is really helping evolve the collective mindset at the organization towards more agility. So working with counterparts in other parts of the organization to really help drive new ways of thinking and working. I'm a big believer in servant leadership. So my role mainly consists of really helping to co-develop, prioritize outcomes with my peers that I mentioned in other parts of the organization, and then helping our team stay really focused on those priorities to drive outcomes. And part of that, obviously, is helping to do storytelling on the great work our teams are doing to the rest of the organization and really highlighting those outcomes and results our teams are driving.
Yeah, and what drew you to Hyatt?
So a close former colleague from Allstate and a good friend of mine actually took a leadership role at Hyatt in their digital org last summer to help kickstart the transformation that was already sort of spinning up here at Hyatt. And I ran into him at a conference last year. It was Mind the Product out in San Francisco. And we talked about the opportunity that he was going after. It sounded really interesting, and they needed someone with my background and experience to help drive the change and the transformation. So it kind of happened organically just through sort of, you know, friendship and connections through my network. But as I got engaged with them, I was really impressed with the leadership team that's in place at Hyatt. Across the board, very strong leader, lean product management and a digital transformation pedigree in our digital team specifically. And then really, there's just this excitement at the organization and a recognition about the importance of organizational agility. And I will say this is probably the first place I've worked where that organizational agility was talked about really at the highest levels of the leadership team. They really kind of walked the talk in that sense of really wanting to institute that organizational agility. So in addition, our family is really big on travel and experiences. So working in the hospitality space felt like a really good place to align my professional passion about lean product and agile transformation with the personal passion in travel.
I love that. You know, being passionate about something, and us as a family as well, we like the ability to travel, and it's great to have friends that are in the industry, and it's great to be passionate about that. The other thing that I thought was really interesting that you mentioned here was, you know, really the organizational mindset, and in particular leadership. It sounds like, to your point, you know, you really get that from Hyatt in terms of leadership having that mindset. And in my experience, that's just, you know, so important to have this message really come from the top, from leadership, and that really sets the tone for the organization.
No doubt. Yeah, I think what's interesting to me about Hyatt being unique from my other experiences is that the leaders are talking about organizational agility, not just in the context of software, but across the board, across all functions and organizations. And so it's not just expected that the software teams and are running in an agile framework or whatever it is. It's really thinking about HR and finance and hotel operations and all the different parts that make the company tick. thinking in that more experimental and test and learn mindset is really interesting and exciting, because it's the first place that I think I've seen it where it's that widespread, and that perspective is kind of shared across the leaders.
Yeah, that's great. And Hyatt being in the hotel, or the, you know, you might say the hospitality space, what is exciting about the industry?
So for me, I've worked mainly at companies where software isn't the actual product that the company's selling. And in a lot of cases, that typically means that technology is sort of an afterthought and hasn't been fully tapped as a catalyst for growth for the company. And so I think what's interesting is that hospitality as an industry is squarely in that space, I think, where, again, like the main product we're selling are hotel rooms and experiences at the hotels. But the opportunity for us to really use technology and digital touch points to create really differentiated and special experiences for our guests is really exciting. I think there's just, the sky's the limit in terms of the potential of what we can do to really kind of revolutionize and take the hospitality and travel experience to the next level using technology as a tool and a catalyst for that.
Yeah. And I would, you know, for me, when I hear that, I think about human-centered design, and I think about, you know, customer-centric, or putting the customer at the center of anything that you do. And I believe that agile ways of working, if it's done right, that's spot on in terms of what it's all about.
No doubt.
Frank, let's talk a little bit more about how sort of you engage your team and within the larger organization and just sort of applying agile ways of working.
Yeah. So a key principle of agile really in the crux of it is the short feedback loops and learning quickly. So for me, frequent communication is key in engaging, you know, both inside of our teams and outside of the digital organization, and really even with customers and users of our products. The pace of change is ever increasing. As we all know, I think every industry is feeling that, but especially I think that's especially true in the current environment with the pandemic going on a daily basis. We're hearing new news and having to shift and pivot and react to new things. So really being in tune with the latest of what's happening across our constituents and our stakeholders is just extraordinarily critical as we set priorities for our teams and really think about the things we want to work on and where we can have the biggest impact. One of my colleagues uses a great analogy of a shoe store versus a shoe workshop. And so part of the communication and engagement that we have with our stakeholders is bringing them into the factory, for lack of a better word, and having really good, transparent discussions about what's on our roadmap, what's being prioritized, and oftentimes, more importantly, what's not being prioritized and why. As I'm sure you know, Nate, from your experiences, sometimes that can be politically charged conversations and so forth. But the reality is there's, you know, constraints and capacity limitations that we have to think about. And so we can't work on all the important things at once. And sometimes we have to pick and choose. So, you know, as part of that, providing that context is really important for effective engagement and communication as well. And helping really show people that global view and helping them understand why is extraordinarily helpful in getting alignment. You know, it's often the case that we're picking between several very important, very impactful, and very interesting work streams or initiatives that we want to work on, and we have to prioritize at the end of the day. And so helping folks understand that it's not a specific case of one being less important or not important in some cases, but just that we have to pick something that's the most important at this specific time that we have to work on now. And so a lot of times we have a conversation internally about it's not no, it's just not right now. And that tends to help a little bit. So I think just, again, getting that engagement and helping to show, you know, bring stakeholders and partners along for the process to help them understand broader context and the whys of the way we're working and how we're prioritizing really helps to drive that level of engagement that we need across the organization.
Yeah, very well said. You know, I heard priority or prioritization in there a few times, and certainly why, right? And really starting with why. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bringing people along in the conversation. You mentioned communication, you mentioned engagement, transparency, and alignment along the way. And, you know, those are certainly the principles that, you know, agile ways of working addresses or espouses through the process. So there's a difference between, you know, doing agile and being agile. And it certainly seems like, you know, you guys are really, you know, working in that environment today. In your mind, what do you need to get right from the beginning?
So in my experience, I think a lot of companies, and these aren't necessarily ones that I've worked for, but I've seen a lot of companies get engaged and caught up in some of the wrong things, like the structures around Scrum, for example, or things like this, where there's almost like a religious zealousness about following the processes of Scrum practices. And so those are imposed on the teams and very tightly managed and controlled. But organizationally, there isn't that agility or that mindset shift that's happening. And so what you end up having is something that I've heard coined as agile theater. I think that was a term by Jeff Patton, who's written some books in the space before. But, you know, just instituting practices on a team does not make an organization obviously agile. And so I think there's some core things that organizations and firms need to think about when getting started, I guess, down this path. So as I mentioned, you know, at its core, agility is about learning quickly in those fast feedback loops and really adapting to those things. So I think, you know, instituting things that can drive culture of experimentation and learning, and really at the crux of it, that psychological safety to allow for experimentation and test and learn is critical. This is hard, right, for old established companies that have been around for a long time. There's some of this kind of legacy enterprise IT project-based sort of behavior that's been ingrained in organizational mindset for a long time, and it's hard to break that stuff. But if leaders kind of walk the talk on providing psychological safety for teams and just the space to experiment and try new things without sort of that fear of consequence is extraordinarily important. But in addition to those things, I think, you know, there's a couple of just foundational pieces, I think, that can help organizations from the beginning of their journey to get it right. And the first I would say is focus on outcomes and not outputs. What that means is just not being so hyper-focused on things like velocity, for example, like I mentioned with the religiousness almost around like Jira and Scrum. It's not about the story points. It's about the business impact and the customer impact you're having with your work and trying to pivot to talk. And just a lot of times it's the language and the terminology that you're using that really helps drive the change there. But thinking and talking more about outcomes, not outputs, is hugely important. I think secondly, you have customer centricity. We touched on that a little bit before too, but making sure that the things we're doing are aligned and beneficial to our customers is critical. And as part of that, really aligning goals and objectives to those customer-centric outcomes that we're trying to drive towards. So those are critical ways to get organizational alignment quickly around these core initiatives. Third, I would say is prioritization and focus. Again, I've seen this a lot at other organizations as well, that there tends to be a tendency to try to do too much all at once. And I think a lot of times what's lost on organizations is the cognitive load that takes on folks to switch context and to try to manage several initiatives at once. And so really helping the teams prioritize and focus on one or maybe two things at a time and just drive them to completion or to the outcome you're trying to drive towards is critically important as well. Another one I would say is pushing decision-making down to the most appropriate level. This can tend to be uncomfortable in kind of command and control cultures or organizations, but the reality is your teams that are boots on the ground, talking to users and in the marketplace and looking at what competitors are doing are in many ways more equipped to make better decisions about things than leaders are in some cases. And so making sure that, you know, driving some of that decision-making down into the organization can really push that agility and that velocity. So one more I'll mention, it's a little bit maybe medium to long-term and hard to do right off the bat, but just a comment on funding models is really critical. I think that how companies fund projects or products drives so much behavior and tone and operating model around how things are executed that it can really make a big difference if organizations are really funding kind of capacity rather than project. Because if you just fund capacity, you know, you're going to have, let's say, 5 or 10 product teams worth of capacity in the organization, but then ruthlessly prioritizing what they're going to work on, that could be really impactful because you're not just committing dollars up front to an initiative. You're committing to people working on things, but pivoting and learning along the way. And that really helps drive some of that underlying agility that we talked about earlier.
That's great. You know, you really, you sort of hit the highlights in terms of how we might advise organizations as well as they start on their agile journey. And clearly, you know, Hyatt and your team are certainly down the path there. If we go back to sort of where you started, one thing that I would like to ask you, actually two things perhaps, sure, is how do you create that safe space for your team and other stakeholders to experiment and test and learn? Perhaps what are some things, like, you know, some tactics that that you might employ?
In the past, when we've tried to like really start off on the journey with the first handful of teams that were trying to work in this new way, a lot of it is really trying to cut down the scope and the problem that they're trying to solve into something that's really digestible and small. And then just being really diligent about what's the smallest thing we can do to prove this, you know, hypothesis right or wrong, or to prove that this perspective or this approach might be right or wrong. And just carving it down to that smallest piece of, you know, the term MVP is way overloaded and overused and probably misused in the industry now. But, you know, that true like smallest experiment or smallest thing you can build to test something out. And really, I think the key thing is that when teams do that, knowing that what's going to come back is not scalable. It's not enterprise grade software. It's not, you know, something that can be just like a switch flipped and turn it on for the rest of the organization or the rest of the customers is fine, right? But I think the key is to celebrate also the learnings from that, because in a lot of cases, that first experiment is going to be way off, and that's okay. But that's where I think the leadership can really set a tone in an organization to say, yeah, we tried a thing and it failed. And that doesn't mean that these people have a black mark on their HR report for the rest of their careers at that company. It just means that, hey, we did something and we learned, and now we're going to try something else. And by the way, we spent 2 weeks on it, not 2 years. And so I think those couple things of just shortening the feedback loops and not punishing, you know, quote, failures, but really celebrating the learnings, regardless of if it's positive or negative learnings, is really important.
That's great, Frank. And just a follow-up question that you touched on too, in terms of leaders, how do you hold them accountable or how do you sort of coach them in the new ways of working?
Yeah, I think this is a challenge because you're trying to reverse and kind of break mindsets that have been established over a period of a number of years in a lot of cases. And so there's just this muscle memory, at especially bigger enterprises that have been around for a while, that's been influenced by the sort of enterprise IT project-based, you know, long delivery cycle sort of processes that were very popular for a long time in the corporate world. And so I think a big part of it is what we mentioned earlier about bringing people along for the journey. And so really helping people to engage in the process, co-design, co-create, even bringing leaders and folks and stakeholders into like user research sessions and things like that really gets that engagement level going. Because the old world of just waiting, you know, for a year or two to get project delivery of requirements we talked about at the start is a much different experience than being part of it and engaging every couple weeks with a team that's building the product. And again, hearing feedback and seeing results and statistics and analytics around usage and so forth. It's about engagement, I think. And at the end of the day, folks end up getting sort of almost addicted to that way of working because it does get exciting and you're seeing something sort of take on life in baby steps as opposed to just waiting for a big bang that typically misses the mark. So a lot of it is just inclusiveness and bringing people along for the journey and helping them sort of, you know, be part of the process.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, it reminds me of a podcast I was listening to recently, and Eric Ries was on, who mm-hmm. is the author of Lean Startup. Right. And he was mentioning earlier in his career at his first company where he was sort of working in this way before, you know, perhaps we called it agile ways of working. In his example, he was shipping code like 40 or 50 times in one day. Mm-hmm. And the story goes that he was, you know, working with Silicon Valley venture capital firms and going in and advising some of their portfolio clients, and they wouldn't believe that that's possible. And in fact, these are facts that he was communicating or advising these companies, and they just said, no, you can't work that way. And we've come a long way in 15, 20 years or however long it's been. But I hear mm-hmm. you. And the addiction is real in terms of, hey, you know, seeing incremental value and being able to tie that to an outcome, as you mentioned, as opposed to an output. Like, what does that look like? And that feedback loop being weeks instead of months or years. It's the new way of working. And when we've gone from speed to market of a year down to months, down to potentially weeks here, it's almost the only way to do it these days. You just can't go in the back room somewhere for a couple of years and then come out with something. You just sort of miss the boat from that perspective.
Based on the pace of change I mentioned earlier too, it's just not a feasible way of operating a business anymore. I mean, the world changes too fast. You hit it on the head. You wait for 2 years to deliver, you've already missed it. So I'm with
exactly.
You.
Yeah. So that's a good segue into my next question, which is just in general or related to Hyatt, biggest challenges that you see?
Sure. I think, yeah, the challenges that I think we're facing are not unique to Hyatt. I think they really apply to any company that are in the throes of an agile transformation. I think, you know, I've seen this pattern a handful of times already. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's some of the topics we've already touched on, but prioritization and focus on the teams is just huge. I mean, there's always way more work than we could ever get done at any firm. That's always the case. But especially now, a lot of firms are resource constrained given the current environment. And so it's even more pronounced and more prominent to get that part right of really prioritizing and getting, you know, focus on the highest impact things possible. And in some cases, given that there's less resources, you really have to focus them and point them in the right direction. So I think that's one. The other piece, like it's some of the stuff we've mentioned, but just breaking some of that muscle memory and the mindsets of the organization in general that's been kind of institutionalized in specific ways of working and thinking for a long time, and trying to break some of that. And a lot of the best way to do that, I think, is, like we mentioned, showing by doing. It's not just showing by saying, and bringing folks along for that journey really helps to break some of that mindset. So I think, again, the biggest challenges are things that are more just related to transformation in general and changing hearts and minds of folks that are part of the organization. And that goes all the way down from the folks working on the team, the designers and engineers and product managers, all the way up to the executives. And it's, you know, different approaches and different ways of shifting that mindset, depending on what level of the organization you're engaging in. But that's the number one thing that that is the hardest about transformation.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And you've touched on this a little bit already, but as you think about how Hyatt has perhaps differed from mm-hmm. other companies on their journeys, would you add anything to that?
I think I'll just reiterate that the biggest thing is having that leadership buy-in and the energy behind the agile transformation and the desire to have that organizational agility really just stands out, because I think it's rare to have that at a company the size of Hyatt's. But those kinds of things and having that in place really provides for the tailwinds for these things to be successful at the end of the day, because, you know, everyone can work out of the same textbook and get the same advisors in to help with transformation. But at the end of the day, if you don't have leadership support and funding and the buy-in at the end of the day, it's just hard to make that stuff happen.
Well, let's switch gears just a little bit here. So let's look into our crystal ball here. I'd love to hear your thoughts on sort of the future of Agile or Agile ways of working.
Sure thing. The current environment we're in with the social distancing, like you mentioned at the beginning, is providing for some just interesting dialogue, because there's been a long-standing debate amongst a lot of folks in this lean product space for the need for teams to be co-located or not. And I think this has forced everybody to experiment with the non-co-located teams. I personally have seen a lot of benefit of having teams co-located, because you have everyone sort of eating and breathing and living the same thing and working together, and those sort of organic conversations that just happen when you put groups of diverse background folks together can be really powerful. But at the same time, especially like I said, in the current environment, working remote has just forced teams to be more creative and think differently of how we work. And, you know, with the availability of online collaboration tools and video conferencing and things like this, teams are leaning into it. And so I think there's going to be a big, interesting impact. And I don't know which way to land necessarily, but there'll be an interesting impact on remote work for Agile teams for sure going forward. And one other thing I'll say is I think there's going to be, the transformation kind of appetite out there in the world, I think, is not going to go away anytime soon, as more and more startups keep popping up, trying to disrupt established industries. Companies are going to have to take this seriously and really think about, again, not only how they're developing software, but how they're working as an organization and the agility that they have across the board. So, I think that pivot away from more of the software-driven, IT-driven agile practices and more into organizational agility practices is going to be a pivot that we'll see here going forward, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is the current environment has certainly accelerated the move to doing agile, or I should say implementing agile ways of working in a virtual environment. And we perhaps have seen some interesting discoveries are, you know, how to launch and manage teams in this space as well. And quite frankly, having the tools and building virtual command centers or Obeya rooms and all kinds of interesting things in terms of being able to keep that, you know, that ability to have the high level of transparency and alignment and all of those sort of, you know, benefits that you might get out of agile ways of working and doing that in the virtual environment. It's been a challenge, but it's also been an opportunity, and it's a really cool space. And to your point, we are seeing, you know, quite a few companies really lean into this because they know it's the way of the future. Mm-hmm. It was out there. It's just shown up a whole lot more quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I guess a follow-on question there is, you know, where can organizations make the most impact in applying Agile now?
Sure. I think I feel like I'm repeating a theme a little bit here, but the prioritization piece, I think, is just huge. And I think that's where a lot of the most hay can be made quickly for organizations looking to get on this path, you know, right away is just hyper-focus and really taking a hard look at what we're working on and why and what the biggest impact items are. So I think starting there is hugely important. There's a saying that I've heard where it's like being data informed and not data driven is also another one. And what I like about that is it's not just about the analytics and the quantitative metrics that you can measure from clicks on a page or you know, guest funnel in our case, like going through the booking flow or something like this. It's about talking to guests and users and customers and understanding the context of why their behavior is what it is. And so I like that notion of being data informed, not data driven, where you have to sort of take all of that input, where it's quantitative, qualitative, even inputs from stakeholders or within the business, and using all of that as kind of a 360 view to help drive direction and strategy and priorities and so forth. And I think, you know, again, back to the things we mentioned before, but being outcome driven and really focused and organized around the customer and the business outcomes you're trying to get towards is hugely important. So I think if firms really kind of focus on those three places first, that's a great foundation to build from in terms of an agile transformation journey.
Yeah. And that's really a great way to recap. So as we wrap up, I'm going to ask you about Chicago. What's one of your most favorite things to do in the summer in Chicago? Because we both know summer, let's see, summer starts as soon as it's above 50 degrees, which could be March or April or May or who knows, right? But that really changes the game in Chicago.
Yeah, with you totally. I think one of my favorite things is just spending summer nights out in the city. You know, catching a Cubs game is always a favorite. Or getting drinks on the riverfront or in an outdoor patio is always great. I mean, the city's such a vibrant place, especially in the summertime. And, you know, given how brutal the winters can be, sometimes we really sort of appreciate the time to be outdoors and enjoy the city when the weather turns nice. So anything related to enjoying the foodie scene here in Chicago and being outside enjoying the summer nights is okay by me.
Absolutely. And before we go, any podcast recommendations?
Sure. Yeah. In this space, This Is Product Management is a great one. They really cover a range of topics that are interesting and impactful for folks in the digital product space. But I'll just as a quick plug, more of a follower of some other thought leaders who've written books and are great, you know, social media follows, obviously, as well. Folks like Marty Kagan, Teresa Torres, Jeff Patton, I mentioned earlier, Barry O'Reilly, Josh Seiden, and Melissa Perry are some favorites of mine that have written, you know, amazing books that have been really influential in my just career and how I've approached, adapting my way of working to digital product. But also, like I said, they're constantly putting out thought pieces and sharing on social media and other venues to keep the community kind of informed and going. And I just always appreciate and share a lot of their insights and thoughts on best practices in the space and how we can evolve them.
Thanks so much, Frank. It's always good to hear different perspectives and thought leadership in this space. So thank you for sharing those names and the podcast that you mentioned as well. Really looking forward to our next trip. Hopefully powered by Hyatt. And so thanks again so much for coming on and sharing all your insights, perspectives, and words of wisdom. Well, I think that covers it for this episode. Thanks again for joining me today, Frank.
Thanks for having me, Nate. I appreciated the conversation.
Absolutely. And until next time, you just listen to The Backlog, an Adaptivate podcast.